This is the public broadcast of Imam W. Dean Muhammad, Muslim American spokesman for human salvation. This week we present part three of a lecture by Imam Muhammad recorded on the campus of Southern University in Hattiesburg, Mississippi, November the 4th, 1993.
She reminded me that I was growing up into manhood. I was going to be a man. And she would say little things to me, complimenting me, flattering me, tell me, yes, I see a little man forming there, you know? Well, I think because man needs this, he needs this. So no matter how much stronger you get to be over us, equal or superior, please, women, still give us this mercy. Give us this mercy. Give us something special. Say, honey, go out there and see what that trouble is in the backyard.
Brother Imam, what is your view on gay rights?
On gay rights? Did you say gay rights? All right. That's a question. That's a good question. Now, I have one real concern. You know, if they had homosexuals in Lot's time, I don't expect for them to go away in our time. But I have one serious question. Recently, you know, the President of the United States, President Bill Clinton, he gave support to the acceptance of gays in the military. Now, my problem is this. If they're really to be identified not as males, not as male like me, then they shouldn't sleep with me and they shouldn't shower with me. That's my only problem.
Yes, sir. Imam, sir, my name is Kareem Ali.
Yes.
I felt I would like to comment on what you said about the equality between the male and the female in the sense that I agree that men and women are equal in a human sense, but we also have to realize that in an unperverted sense, there is, like you said, an inequality. In other words, each is superior to the other, each is supportively inferior to the other, each is sensitively interior to the other, and each is liberatedly exterior to the other. And so in that sense, I think that we have to recognize that, and if we look at the way the family is structured Islamically, the reason that this perverted way is coming out is because there's a lot of confusion about these roles, and there are certain roles that are definitely for females and definitely for males in the sense of the way Islamic society is structured. And which, commenting on what you said about the president and the homosexual, in the Constitution, it is said that my freedom stops where your nose begins. And the thing that's coming out now is that the homosexuals have always been in the military, they've always been in society, they've always had important positions, but now they're getting to the point of arrogance and trying to push these things on the heterosexual. And I know I experienced some things here recently in this area that way, and I am from Kosciuszko, Mississippi, and I just recently came from the Washington, D.C. area. And I noticed that it was mentioned in the Muslim Journal and other places that they get to the point where they actually will see heterosexual males and actually feel like they should be able to force this type of behavior on the heterosexual. And that's where the perversion comes in. And you see little kids now that there's certain things that you say are traditional, that is Islamic, that's natural for people, and you see little boys now that they are beginning to put pink into little boys' clothes. They'll have little kids where little boys would have little squiggly hairdos, and people are wearing rings in every ears, and so there's a confusion there between the roles, and it's not supposed to be to that point. So I wanted to comment on that.
Oh, we appreciate your comments. But I mean, you mentioned the homosexual. I have to go back to the biggest problem, and for the military and for society, you know, if they are to be identified as female, not male, then is it right for me to have to sleep with them? I shouldn't have to sleep with them. The attraction is for me, and not for women. Why don't they sleep with the women? And because the women don't want them sleeping with them, you know. So they have to find another place for them.
Sir, lest this turn into gay bashing, let me ask you a question about Malcolm X.
Yes.
I understand, or at least I've heard, that you may have been the one to lead Malcolm X toward Orthodox Islam. Could you comment on your relationship with him and your quest with him?
Yes. I have to first give credit to the wisdom of Farad, the one who conceived the idea of the Nation of Islam. Actually, he conceived the idea for the FOI, or the Fruit of Islam, the militant unit of males, and also the Muslim Girls Training and General Civilization class, the unit for the females, all his ideas. The University of Islam, which was really a school beginning in the elementary level, and the hope was to one day have colleges. I have to give Farad credit for all of that, and I have to give him credit also for having the wisdom to arouse our curiosity and make us want to find more answers to his teaching than appeared on the surface, or in the surface language, in the literal script of Farad. Honorable Elijah Muhammad was loyal to his teacher. He taught us, he taught Malcolm, he taught all of his ministers, he taught me, to look deep. That's the expression Honorable Elijah Muhammad gave. He said, look deep. Don't just see what's on the surface. He said, look deep. And once, when he put me out, and he rejected me, excommunicated me, the language for us in Nation of Islam, put out. You're put out. He put me out three times. And one time when he put me out, I told him, I said, Daddy, I said, if you don't like what I'm doing, my questioning things and rejecting things that don't digest well with me, I said, you have to blame your own self for that, because you told me to look deep. And really, I think I got closer to my father. I won him as a closer friend by being that way and being truthful and honest with him. I think I won him as a close friend. And I think Malcolm was loved by him until Malcolm differed with the Nation of Islam openly. Malcolm was loved by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and he was given full freedom to represent the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and the Nation of Islam. And I think it was because the Honorable Elijah Muhammad admired him for being intellectually curious and not buying every strange thing that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said. Now, I hope I answered your question. Maybe I didn't. If I helped, it was because maybe I was just a little bit more courageous than Malcolm when it came to questioning the theology of the Nation of Islam and questioning the religious future for the Nation of Islam. He acknowledged in his autobiography that I said that changes would have to be made. I'm using my own language, but in brief, changes would have to be made in the Nation of Islam's religion for the future, one day in the future. So he acknowledged that, and I don't say I was his teacher. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad was our teacher, and we helped each other. I helped him, and he helped me. That is, Malcolm helped me, and I helped Malcolm. I did not bring him to Orthodox Islam. I did not. In fact, when he made his announcement, I was surprised too. And believe me, I didn't agree with everything he said and did after he separated from the Nation of Islam. I agreed with some of it, and I disagreed with some of it. Yes.
Yes, ma'am. First of all, I want to introduce myself as Assistant Imam of Selma, Alabama, Siraj yes. Tajuddin. And I once you said a person who has an appetite for praise is on the road to being a devil. I don't wish to put you on the road to the devil, but you are one of the foremost leaders, irregardless of title. You are a foremost leader for African Americans, a foremost leader for our country, and a foremost leader for humanity. My question is, how does Prophet Muhammad's role in bringing the unity in religion can help America in its social ills, meaning the Quran and its application to the social ills, regardless of ethnic background and culture and so on and so forth? How can the Quran be applied to the social ills of America?
Yes. Islam is a religion that respects the excellence of the human creation. And we believe that the human being is given free will, therefore circumstances may cause the human being to lose contact with his true destiny or a sense of his true destiny, and he can become the worst creature on this earth. But we believe that the aim in the human life for man, for all people, all races, is excellence. That the motivation in man's life, in human life, is excellence. And it is a part of the whole, partly it is characteristic of the whole scheme of this material universe, animals, plants, and everything. Everything is evolving, trying to evolve into better condition. Stronger condition and better condition to survive better, to be better. We believe that. And man, we believe, is the freest creature in the universe. And given rational mind, moral nature, rational mind, conscious nature, conscious mind, conscious moral mind, and a rational nature for his intellect, he is capable of progressing and progressing and progressing with no limits seen as to how far he can go. We believe that also that this is an idea accepted in the learned people of our American history. We believe that they believe the same. So Muslims, in my opinion, the best way to see Islam, Islam or the Quran itself, help, assist, serve the betterment of this society is for Muslims themselves to reacquaint themselves with the Quran. Colonial domination of the Muslim world, our reacting Muslims, I'm speaking for all Muslims on earth now, our reacting to the white man's superiority or to his arrogance that we identify as his arrogance, our reacting to it, our getting into a competition with Christianity. Even with Christ Jesus, we want to put our prophet in competition with Christ Jesus. We begin to mystify him too much. We begin to cloud the air about him when he was nothing but a common human being just like us. He had no divinity or anything. He claimed no divinity. Allah says he's a common mortal like us. See, to me, we ourselves have allowed hurt feelings because of jealousy of the white world's dominance. We have allowed hurt feelings to make us drunk and to cause us to misread our own Quran. We ourselves need to sober up and read the Quran with a sober mind and then live the best of our own religion, and that's how the Quran will best serve America and any other country we are living in. Will we ever see an end of racism? I've seen the end of racism. You'll see the end of it when you put it down as an issue.
We will return to today's program after these important messages. Imam W. Dean Muhammad will be making appearances throughout the country, and believers wishing to support his mission of propagation and community assistance are asked to send their contribution made payable to Ministry of W. Dean Muhammad and mailed to Post Office Box 1961, Calumet City, Illinois, 60409. W. Dean Muhammad and guests, a new hour of informative television with an Islamic focus on important issues facing our society today, is now being syndicated. For information on how you can get this show in your area, call 1-708-862-7733 or write WBM Publication, Post Office Box 1944, Calumet City, Illinois, 60409. And now back to today's program.
Just one more question, please.
How about the girls and boys of Islam? Are they treated equally?
I hear you, but I'm not. Again, please. Put the mic down.
How about the girls and boys of Islam? Are they treated equally?
The Quran and?
Islam. The boys and girls of Islam.
Boys and girls. Are boys and girls treated equal?
Yes.
Equally in Islam?
Yes.
Yes, certainly. Certainly. If we follow the Prophet of Islam, Muhammad of Arabia, we have to treat them equally, yes. Sometimes I think that girls are treated better. I've never heard that two boys will get paradise. a father of two boys, pardon me, will get paradise.
Let's have one. Let's have one last question, and I believe from the gentleman who hasn't gotten a chance to ask one. These two last gentlemen will be the last question.
All right. Sorry. I was wondering how do you interpret the Muslim doctrine of jihad as laid down in the Quran by Muhammad? Now, what's your interpretation of that?
Yes. Yes. Most scholars now, and I believe in the history of Islam, except for few periods in the history of Islam, believe that jihad, or struggle, jihad means really struggle. But struggle with arms, struggle should be with all the means that we have. And the most valued or most respected struggle is the struggle that one makes with his own life. He puts his own life on the line. This struggle for Muslims is first the struggle against the tendency in ourselves to disobey God, to disrespect this wonderful creature God made, the human excellence in us. Jihad against one's own defects, the bad tendencies in us, is the first and perhaps the best jihad for the individual to make. But we know that when a society or a group of men will go to war with arms, put their lives on the line, to preserve the good life that God intended, revealed for them and intended for them, that is the major sacrifice, that is the major jihad. We have to acknowledge that. But that is not a jihad that we hope to continue in. We hope to see a time when we won't have to pick up arms. We don't have to have a physical war or have that kind of jihad. We hope that we will be free to continue the best of jihad, that jihad that benefits mankind the best, and that is the jihad to promote the spread, the propagation of knowledge, correct knowledge. Revealed knowledge first, all correct knowledge. That's the best jihad. I will add that, in my opinion, most Muslims
most Muslims that I've become acquainted with, they don't have the right understanding of jihad in Islam, for Muslims, jihad. They think that jihad, they seem to buy the what has been popularized by the press, that jihad is a conflict with Christians, a conflict with the West. That's jihad. That's the jihad we should be involved in. We read in the Quran, where God reveals, highly praises He, that our argument is not with the believers in God or the people of the book. Not argument, what is it? Our challenge is not for the people of the book, but it is for the idolaters. It is against the idolaters, or it's for the idolaters, and for the oppressors, anyone who oppresses. Islam came as a religion intended to serve the liberation of human society, to liberate humanity from all forms of oppression. So in my opinion, Muslims are to engage in jihad for the purpose of promoting true knowledge, number one, and also for the purpose of defending the life that God revealed and intended for us. But to say that we are in some kind of contest with the West, or with Christianity, or with Jews, and that we should have a jihad against them, in my opinion, is incorrect. We should only fight guilty parties. We should only fight oppressors.
As-salamu alaykum, Brother Imam.
Wa alaykum as-salam.
My question is, in my many years of being a Muslim, and also moving from the idea of a black God, or even a white God, my jihad for my personal self, I have come to grips with the reality that there are people in the society, some of them who claim to be Muslim, some non-Muslim. How do you prescribe of taking away the idea, the best method of taking away the idea that a black man, white man, or any type of physical man can be divine or is your Lord and Savior for saving you and sending you to heaven? As-salamu alaykum.
That's very difficult, because no matter what we say, we always will find people that will rationalize and find some justification for saying that a certain man, a certain person is God. The best answer I could give is the answer that I myself arrived at when I was about 13, I think. I said, they live, they get sick, they die, they make mistakes, they can't be my God.
I have one more question, Mr. Because I didn't get the answer for my first question. You give right to other people come before me. I was before them. You do it. There's no equality.
Right.
There's supposed to be equality. I was before this.
Yes.
Sir.
The permission.
Yes. Yes. The question you're speaking about, civil liberty, human liberty, Islam will help it. The problem is, today, Islam world, you know, is intellectual, cultural, and mental in one darkness. You didn't speak about any of this dark question. I suppose my question, for example, when you give answer to my question, if you compare Palestine, Bosnia-Herzegovina, and Kashmir, all three, this country and those questions, if you compare it with Kurdish people, genocide, it is less than 1%. And you can very easily say, we don't do so much, we didn't even speak about it. It's, for me, is not enough, I will tell. The second, I give you an example about civil mental thinking. For example, during Algerians' liberation against French, 500,000 Frenchmen, 1958, 59, and beginning 60, demonstrated in Paris against their government and supported Algerian people liberation. We don't want our government to do more in this country.
Yeah.
During Vietnam War, 100,000 of Americans demonstrate, didn't accept government's policy because it hurt civilian people, and American people stopped their government. Even it was very hard American government. It was Vietnam question of still hard American government because America stopped war early because of American civil people's opinion. The third one I give from Jewish society, Israel, which in most of Muslim country hate them and strong anti-Semitic. 1982 when Israel occupied Lebanon, it was self-defense. 100,000 of Jewish from 5 million Israel's population, 100,000 Jewish demonstrate against their government, say we want our government to come back. Uh-huh. Question is, why? I give you those examples because you will understand my question. I will have a comparison. What is problem? Intellectual, civil, mental problem in Islam world. No Islam intellectual speaking about. Many, I told you in Kurdistan, which kind of barbarism, discrimination go against Kurdish people. In Saudi Arabia and Kuwait against Shia Arab minority. In Iraq against Shia people. And other minority people. Where any Islamic intellectual demonstrate, protest this, us, West, us, Israel do it. Mm-hmm. Why?
Okay. All right.
Where is the civil people? Why is the ideology will liberate humanity? Where is this ideology?
Yes.
This ideal?
okay. I thought I answered your question, but I'll say that I do agree with you, and not enough attention is given to the misdeeds of Muslims, the mistreatment coming from Muslims to Muslim citizens or to people of Muslim areas because they are minorities, because they don't buy or don't accept their thinking or their particular school of thought or whatever. I do think that their behavior is barbaric, and Muslims should give more attention to these problems in Muslim society and should bring pressure to bear on those guilty governments or guilty parties for their barbarism. I agree with you. I will look for ways to be of more help myself. That's all I can say to you.
Thank you very much, Imam Muhammad, and thank you all very much for coming.
This concludes Imam Muhammad's lecture on the campus of the University of Southern Mississippi, November the 4th, 1993. For more on the ministry of Imam Muhammad, call or write WDM Publication, call 1-708-862-7733, or write Post Office Box 1944, Calumet City, Illinois, 60409, for books, tapes, and videos by Imam Muhammad. Also see our ad in the Muslim Journal newspaper. Thanks for listening. This is the public broadcast of Imam W. Dean Muhammad, Muslim American spokesman for human salvation. This week we present part one of a lecture by Imam Muhammad recorded on the campus of Southern University.
We appreciate the opportunity to be here on this campus, prestigious campus, and the opportunity to be participating here this morning in this class, comparative religious class and history, African American history class. I believe, as I understand it, combined. And I hope that we can share with you
some information that you will appreciate. let me begin by saying that the religion of Islam is a religion that is called comprehensive, and it is very different from most religions. We don't think of our life as being a spiritual life separated from a worldly life. When we say worldly life, we mean sinful life. The world to us is one whole, one systemic whole, and it is all created by God, and it is all good. If we respect it, and if we respond to it in the right way, we believe that everything is good. Even alcohol is good. Used for the correct purpose, and serving, used as it should be used, alcohol is good. Everything is good when used properly, or if God intended for us to use it. But we do have in common with Christians, I would say, the same belief in God, essentially, the same belief in God. Trinitarian idea is something foreign to Islam, but we believe that the Trinitarian idea is really one of the great mysteries of religion, and especially one of the great mysteries of Christianity. And we believe that when that's rightly understood, we believe in the same God. We are all believers in one God. We believe in one God. And we also share with Christianity, a belief in Jesus the Christ, peace be on him. We believe that his birth, his virgin birth, that Mary, we say when we mention Mary, the same thing we say when we mention Jesus Christ, peace be on him, we say peace be on her. Alayha salam, we say, peace be on her. And that gives her a station in the ranks of God's servants, very similar to that of the prophets, though she's not called a prophetess, she's given that same kind of respect and recognition, because we believe, according to our Quran, that she received revelation from God. She did receive revelation from God. So we say Maryam, which means Mary, Maryam, alayha salam, Mary, peace be on her. That greeting is only for prophets. When we mention the companions of the prophets, first companions of the prophets, like Omar, radiallahu anhu, we say, may God be pleased with him. We don't say alayhi salam, that's only for prophets. We say radiallahu anhu, means may God be pleased with him. And when we mention the wives of the prophet, who are very special and very high in the order of personality for Muslims, we say the same thing. For example, Aisha, the young wife of the prophet, we say radiallahu anha, may God be pleased with her. So you see, we give very special attention and regard to Jesus Christ the prophet, and also his mother, Blessed Mother, Maryam, Mary. May God be peace be upon both of them. Alayhim as salam. We say alayhim as salam. Peace be on the two of them. Now, there's something else that we have in common too. We have language in common, scriptural language in common. And there was a slave. I don't want to take but a few minutes. We're going to give most of the time to questions. There was a slave who brought to America. Ibn Sa'id is his name, and it's documented that while in prison, he happened to get in some kind of mishap that caused him to be arrested. He was in prison. He wrote Quran on the rope, on the cell, on the wall of the prison, and it was reported too that his master. That one of his masters, I think it was his first master, liked him so well that he made him like one of his secretaries for his business work. His master went abroad to do trade. So one day his master was going abroad, and he told Ibn Sa'id, he said, I'm going to the country of your people. He said, what would you like me to bring you when I return? So Ibn Sa'id said, bring me a Quran. He wanted the Muslim Bible. He said, bring me a Quran. And his master said, on one condition, that is that you also accept from me a gift of the Bible. So Ibn Sa'id agreed. And his master brought him a Quran and also a nice brand new Bible. So Ibn Sa'id got serious, and he started to read the Quran and the Bible and try to see if there was a comparison. He concluded that there is a comparison. Ever since I read that of Ibn Sa'id, I've had a strong desire to do a study of the Quran and the Bible and to write a book on how the two compare. We don't have time here, but there are many, many very interesting comparisons. I heard that the class have already gone over the history of our Prophet, prayers and peace be on him, and over the essentials of our religion. The Prophet said, when he was asked, what is Islam? The Prophet, peace be on him, he said, Islam is to believe in one God and accept the Prophet of Muhammad and his Prophet, and to make prayers, and to give charity, spend in the way of God, that is to be charitable, and to fast the month of Ramadan and make visit or pilgrimage to the house. The Kaaba is called also the house, al-Bayt. Very, very simple explanation of what Islam is. And if anyone would ask me what is Islam, I would have to follow the Prophet and say the same thing he said. Thank you very much, and I guess we can open for questions. Yes.
What rank is one of the
Arabs? Yes, you mean that I belong to?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, we reject the idea that Islam is a denomination, a religion that accept denominations or branches. We are a branch, but we don't see ourselves as a denomination in Islam. We see ourselves as an orientation, a mental orientation in Islam. Some say a school of thought. Madhab is the term, madhab. Madhab comes from the word dahaba, which means to go, to travel, you know. And we take different routes, but we are all in the same religion, and we are all having the same objectives. There is no difference for us. I would say there are some other groups that are more, I think, to be classified as a branch or a denomination than we are. Before we became, I would say, integrated, for want of a better term right now, into worldwide Islam, we were, we weren't a branch, but we were an independent religious group, identifying with all Muslims and with Islam, but having religious concepts that are not accepted by most Muslims, even some of these, very radical branches, like Ahmadis. Ahmadis are not accepted by most Muslims either. They are not accepted by the Meccans, by the Saudis, by Egypt. Pakistan now also rejected them not so long ago. So they are much more closer to what Muslims of the world believe than what we than we were. We were far from believing when it comes to religious concepts. We were far from believing the way most Muslims believe. So I believe you might be referring to that. But now we have changed. We saw that we made errors, and the majority of the followers of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, the late leader, may God forgive him his errors and grant him paradise, have come this way with us. Yeah. Doesn't mean that we have given up any of the, the positive things that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad was about, or the things that he gave us to make us have a better sense of self-esteem, and a better sense of our responsibility to our race and to the world. In the world and to the world of mankind, we haven't given up any of those things, and we don't give up the disciplines, because the disciplines were really Islamic disciplines. I'm speaking of not drinking, you stress no drinking, no partying, no late, hanging out late at night, being a decent father, a decent wife, you know, and bringing your money home, not spending it in gambling and things like that, you know, and not breaking the law and making trouble. Just make trouble the way he made trouble, just call the right man a devil, and that was about it, you know, but obey the laws of the land. So we still believe in that. We believe in decent behavior, decent behavior, and our religion is a religion of discipline. That's what characterized Muslims perhaps more than any other thing, is that our life is a life of strict discipline every day, all day long. As soon as we awake in the morning, the first thing we have to do is make ablution or clean, the ritual cleaning for prayer. And we make our prayer, face of prayer, before the sunrise. And the whole day is a day that reminds us that at the fajr time, the pre-sunrise time, and noon time, and asr time, afternoon time, and sunset time, maghrib time, and isha, night time. We have to be conscious of our discipline all the time. And during the month of Ramadan, we have to read the Quran in order to complete the whole Quran in 1 month. So we are spending a lot of time reading the Quran. Our whole life is a very disciplined life. We are not to smoke. We are we're not to drink. We're not to take drugs. None of us to take drugs. We know that is illegal. And we're not to commit adultery or fornication, you know. We can't play. Have sexual fun. We are supposed to do that. So our religion is a very strict religion. I repeat that people may think that we are a kind of radical departure from Islam, but that's in the past. We are not. We're the same as most Muslims. And we don't make a big thing about these divisions. Like even Shiites, I know some Shiites believe in God as much as any Sunni or more, you know? So we don't make a point of singling out people saying that they are not Muslims or something like that. We just encourage everybody to be right and obey the authority for Muslims. That's the Quran. To obey the Quran, whether Shi'i or Ahmadi, if all of us respect what we all agree to be authority for Muslims, that's the Quran, I think we will stop having these divisions, and we can think differently. God wants us to think differently. God doesn't want all of us to think alike. We advance the whole Muslim community when we have people who are not afraid to think independently. Okay.
Yes.
Yes, the Shia and Ahmadi, the Shia believe the main thing that distinguishes them from others in Islam is their interest and devotion to the cousin of the Prophet, may God be pleased with him, Ali. Who also was a caliph, a ruler, in the early days of Islam. They believe that because of the blood, the close relationship to the Prophet, the cousin, that he is to be regarded as the Prophet himself is to be regarded. And to me, that's not acceptable. In the Quran, God says that you're not the father of any of their children. And I don't think that's to say that it meant male children, not the father of any of their males. I don't think that's there to tell us that he had no son, to survive him. I think that's there to say that Islam is not a priesthood, it's not a rabbinical order, and no blood lineage is to be recognized. The Prophet cannot be inherited by any particular person or by relatives. That's my understanding, and I believe most Muslim scholars would take that same position. So the difference is that they begin with the cousin Ali, may God be pleased with him, and they see him as the first imam, and then they believe that there are 11 others. They believe in 12 great leaders, 12 imams. They believe that the last imam is still alive, he's still existing. And this to me is superstition and is very strange to what I see in the holy book of all Muslims, their book too, the Shiites' book too, the Quran. I find that when I meet with them, they don't like to make discuss that with me. They prefer just to discuss those things that we agree upon. And that tells me that they themselves are not comfortable with that. If they were comfortable with it, I think they would insist that we all believe it. But most of them do not push that idea on others. And I think eventually the Shiites are going to change. I think Shiaism, like I hinted last night, if I didn't say it plainly, I hinted last night that the Ahmadi group, the Nation of Islam, under Elijah Muhammad, the Ahmadi group, and the Motion Science Temple of Ju Ali, an African American, all, I believe, formed because of a need to get the Arabs, the image of the Arabs, off of Islam. Out of Islam, off of Islam. Islam was beginning to be thought of as an Arab religion, the religion of the Arabs. And the Shiites, I believe, they had problems in the very early history of Muslims. They had problems with the majority of the Muslims because they just wanted to give more attention to Ali. May God be pleased with him. By them doing this, then they made the other Muslims respond to them and look upon them as division in Islam. I believe that if it wasn't for Arabism developing, perhaps even the Shiites wouldn't have formed. I think these are reactions to Arab dominance in Islam.
We will return to today's program after these important messages. Imam W. Dean Muhammad will be making appearances throughout the country, and believers wishing to support his mission of propagation and community assistance are asked to send their contribution made payable to Ministry of W. Dean Muhammad and mailed to Post Office Box 1961, Calumet City, Illinois, 60409. W. Dean Muhammad and guests. A new hour of informative television with an Islamic focus on important issues facing our society today is now being syndicated. For information on how you can get this show in your area, call 1-708-862-7733 or write WBM Publications, Post Office Box 1944, Calumet City, Illinois, 60409. And now back to today's program.
Did you and Minister Farrakhan have the same idea? And if they were
Yes. We have the same history. We both were ministers of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. We both used to preach the message that was given by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. We were very close friends. We studied together. We discussed problems together. And I still consider him a friendly person. He's a very friendly person, and I like him. But we are not having the same understanding of Islam, and we are not having the same priorities. Priorities are greatly different. Priorities for us is religion. Religion is first. Then economic or social reform or economic development that comes, and that should be left to the individual. You know, we don't see that as something that we should include as a religious presentation. And when you present a religion, we don't think we should give that kind of special attention to the problems of African American people, of black people. We should just present the religion. And then we should treat the ills, the social ills of the black people, African American people, just as you would treat them. If a professor here would treat them, or an activist would treat them, you see, that's what we believe. And if he would do that, if he would keep his Al-Aun Elijah Muhammad, Nation of Islam, program for treating the ills of black people separate from the religion and don't make it a priority so big or so important that we think that fundamental with him is for him is economics, or black empowerment. It hurts the chance of people benefiting from Quran and from Islam, the life of suffering from Islam, when we invite them to black empowerment in the name of God or in the name of Islam. I think that's the main difference I would have with him.
Last night, from your lecture, I learned that over the years I have mispronounced the name of Debbie D. Ford. I've always just said Debbie D. Ford, Debbie
R. Yes.
And I learned from you last night that that's the incorrect pronunciation. Would you tell us the correct pronunciation of that name? If I could hit you with another question, it's always been very puzzling to us about exactly where this gentleman came from. If I understood you correctly last night, you said there's evidence suggesting that he came from Pakistan.
Yes.
If you could give us a hint of what some of that evidence is about his origin. And then one other question, if I may. Many of our students have been socialized into the Christian tradition. Now, if I'm not mistaken, within Islam, and correct me if I'm wrong, there is the belief that Jesus was not crucified. And I like that.
There you go.
Okay. Now, can you throw some light on this Muslim belief that Jesus was not crucified? And that, if you could go into that for us very briefly, those three items.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. The name is spelled in English, F-A-R-D. And also, when he wrote it in the script, Arabic script, he spelled it the same, F-A-R-D. The name that he gave is Fard. And Fard means just a person, like we say John Doe. Yeah. But he didn't give that pronunciation. He didn't tell them to call him Fard. He told him told his followers to call him Farad. So the spelling, the pronunciation of F-A-R-D is Farad, though it's not spelled that way. It's Farad. We all say Farad. We don't say Farad. You know, we say Farad. Where he came from, we were told in the early days that he came from Arabia, came from Mecca. And we know why, because Mecca is the holy city, so he wanted to, you know, to give him that special, like God coming from the holy city, you see. God in the flesh coming to save the black man from the holy city, from Mecca. In fact, in some of his lessons, he said, he called them lessons, little pamphlets, he said that so many great leaders met in the holy city of Mecca to study the problem of the blacks in America, and they agreed to send a messenger. First he called himself a messenger to them to teach them of their own, meaning their history and etc. As Muslims. He said, so they sent a messenger to him, and that messenger was him, that is Farad. There was a man who passed recently. His name is Muhammad Abdullah. Muhammad Abdullah. I'm sure that man was Farad. This man was from India, that is now Pakistan. He had a British passport. He came to America. He went to Fiji Islands. He's known by the Fiji Island people, mainly by migrant workers from India who came to Fiji Islands and made that their home. He became their teacher. They called him Master. They called him Master Abdullah. Many of his students that are in San Francisco, Hayward, California, that area, they came to the same area where he came, and they called him Master Abdullah. He had told me things that nobody would know, but very few people, very close to the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, relatives, very few people. And no one knew how we were taught to pray, the little blessing we were taught to say when we were children, except members of our family. I doubt if any of these brothers are older members of the community. They wouldn't even know, but he knew. And I'll let you know how he made me know that he was aware of that. We were taught to say that, say the prayer, but the language was not correct. We were taught to say, La ilaha illallah Muhammad Rasulullah. La ilaha illallah Muhammad Rasulullah. The correct reading, translation is, La ilaha illallah Muhammadan Rasulullah. That's the correct one. So, one day we were sitting with him, and he was meeting our daughter for the first time. And he offered us some tea and everything, and he looked at her, and he put his hands like this for blessing, and he said, La ilaha illallah Muhammad Rasulullah. That's not how he blessed. He never did that with me. I had known him for several years, and that was not how he gave the blessing. So I said to myself, boy, how does he know? How is he saying that like that? How would he know that we used to pray that way? That's just one of the things, so many things that make me know. He defended the Nation of Islam. He said that the Nation of Islam, with me and with others, the Nation of Islam was a better organization than the Ahmadi movement. He was known to be an Ahmadi. These people I'm talking about, they were students of his. If you go visit them in California, they would tell you they're Ahmadis, they're Ahmadis. But he himself, he had more respect and more admiration for the Nation of Islam, for the Ahmadi Muhammad, than he did even for the Ahmadi people. With me, he rejected the Ahmadis. He said they'd do it wrong, they won't listen, and that's the way he talked. That's the way he would talk to me. That's just a few things. There's so many things that I could tell you about him. He knew the members of my family. He knew them very well, all of them. He never asked me to name anyone's name, you know. And also, it's strange that he has two daughters, one's Farida, the other one's Salwa, and the pronunciation that he has, the same pronunciation that my brother Nathaniel has. So he either gave these names to my brother for his daughter. My brother has two daughters too, Farida and Salwa, right together. So he either gave the names to my brother directly or either through the father. My father could have been secretly in keeping contact with him. That could have happened. That could have been. When he passed away, he told his family he wanted me to do the service, to do the janazah, the service. It didn't work out that way because I didn't think I should. The situation wasn't good for me to do that. To do the service for him, but he wanted that. He wanted that. And he gave all the support in the world to me as the leader. Last speech I remember him making to members of our association, or our group, he told them that you have a leader, a very special leader. Say if he was one of us, say we would give him his weight in gold. So he said good things like that to help me, you know, to really help me in the eyes of, help improve my situation with the followers of the Nation of Islam. One day, this is the last thing I'm going to say. One day, I was very angry with Farad when I came into understanding of the deviations in the religion and how it had hurt us. It really had hurt us. I know a lot of blacks say, well, how did it hurt you? Believe me, what we believed in really hurt us. A lot of help came from positive things, but some of the negative things set us back and really messed up our minds. Some of us had the mental institutions. Some of us are crazy now because we couldn't handle it. He was on the rostrum, like sitting on the up in the rostrum in Chicago. Seats on the rostrum, they go like this. You can sit like bleachers.
Tune in next week for the public broadcast of Imam W. Dean Muhammad, Muslim American spokesman for human salvation. Thanks for listening.